Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
This is Prime Time on Money FM 89.3. I'm Rachel Kelly. Now, techno-nationalism is a term that has been frequently used in commentary on the so-called tech Cold War between the US and China. But what does it actually mean, and what impact will it have on regional businesses and economies? Well, we're joined today by Professor Gerard George, and he's the Dean at the Lee Kong Chian School of Business at Singapore Management University, to find out. Well, Professor, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, absolutely. It's a fantastic pleasure to join you.
So tell us, what exactly is techno-nationalism?
Over the past couple of days, we've been having this conversation. We have something called SMU's Changemaker Conversations as part of our Lee Kuan Yew Global Business Plan competition. And there we are starting to talk about the big issues that are affecting technology startups world over. And techno-nationalism is when a country starts thinking about its own national security, economic prosperity, and social stability. And doing so means that startups and technology companies have to look at how they adopt technologies or where they keep the data and how these issues are connected with access to customers or even national security. So really, techno-nationalism is about countries trying to protect its own interests, and doing so, it affects the whole ecosystem of startups and technology companies.
Now, let's just take a step back. At which point did we start to see the politicization of innovation, I guess you could call it that, and how do you see this evolving?
So you can hear words called the technology Cold War and all of these issues associated with wider trade partnerships. What really is beginning to happen is a bifurcation of trade between US and China around these strategically sensitive issues. So, for example, China's top chip makers are speeding up efforts to reduce the use of US semiconductor equipment, right, as fears mount that Washington will impose further curbs. So it also means that these trade sanctions will move beyond hard technology, such as semiconductors, and start looking at data. And now we have this example of WeChat and TikTok in the U.S., as well as in India, where we see countries then saying, you can leave our data and our consumer data aside because we are concerned about national security of how you would use this data.
Tell us about the risk of a looming tech Cold War then, and what does it mean for startups and investors?
So several things. First is what we're going to see is that we're seeing this politicization of innovation, right? It means that for the foreseeable future, I think we're going to hear more and more of this conversation about access to markets where countries are looking at innovation for self-sufficiency and national security, not just in technology, but also in its areas such as supply chain and food and so forth. So many startups and entrepreneurs have to look beyond their home market, now also have to decouple themselves preemptively to avoid being stuck in the same situation as TikTok. Wherever organic scaling is not possible due to political sensitivities, we can expect more partnerships, cross-border, white labeling, working together to make sure that we have access to each other's markets. So startups and technology innovation is no longer a one-man game. It's much more about partnerships and ecosystems and building these communities where you can work together.
So let's talk about the dominance of big tech. Is it a complicated yet symbiotic relationship with innovation? How can startups really flourish under the new normal, as we should call it?
So when we think of big tech, we sort of ask, you know, is the ability to scale present still for our startups? And the answer is, I think that still is available, right? But all of the politicization of innovation actually confuses startups and makes it much more difficult to scale. So for us to hit a unicorn or a billion-dollar startup, now we have to think a lot more about our ecosystem, our partners, and not just about technology or whether you're good at your technology or whether your customers are able to get greater value out of it. You have to think about all these related issues that we didn't have to before.
So what does this mean for the landscape here in Southeast Asia?
So I think Singapore stands to benefit. Southeast Asia stands to benefit. When you think about China, and when they've become unfriended by the world, Chinese firms now flock to Singapore. So you can see that, for example, Tencent Holdings recently announced that they're setting up a regional hub in Singapore. the same thing with Ant Financial Ant Group. They've got a large presence in Singapore, and they're bidding for one of our digital bank licenses from MAS. So what we're going to see is a lot more of China's big tech creating jobs in Singapore and the region.
Mm-hmm.
But it also creates some confusion, right? If more and more of the China-US bifurcation happens, then at some point we'll also have to start making choices. Despite our desire to remain neutral and amicable to both sides, this will force certain technology choices made by companies.
At what point do you think that will come? Obviously, we've got the U.S. elections just around the corner. We had the first presidential candidate debate take place this week. So what are you looking out for on this front?
I think the difficult relationship between U.S. and China will be here to stay for some time, right? Regardless of whoever wins the U.S. election. The challenge is the U.S. feels that Chinese firms threaten their competitiveness in their home market as well as global markets. But Chinese firms have a massive market within China, right? If you look at within China, they have over 900 million digital users, and China protects itself with this great firewall. So when we hear stories of Google finding it difficult to work in China, that's some of these issues that come up. But I think the issue of whether U.S. and China, that difficult issue would go away after the election, I don't think so. I think we're going to see this continue for some point of time.
Let's not forget that we are still in the midst of a global pandemic. To what extent do you think that's impacted this, as you've called it, looming tech cold war?
You know, in fact, the news today, some scientists are saying, let's not count too much on the vaccine solving our problems immediately. I don't think these problems are going to go away anytime soon. So what we are likely to see is that China recovers faster in terms of the economy, so it's able to manage its own. But the language in different countries have changed. Our focus in Singapore has become making sure that we have jobs. And because of that, everybody starts looking at how can we invest in innovation to create these new jobs, and whether value is flowing out of the country or into the country. So these conversations become more difficult as the economy sort of puts a stranglehold on all these countries in our neighborhood. So I think over the next year, we'll have to have some difficult conversations of how we think of innovation ecosystems. And if you look at what our government here has done, they've done a fantastic job, for example, the Startup SG Founder Grant. We've also invested, like in SMU's Business Innovations Generator, with a lot of ecosystem to support entrepreneurs to make sure that we can, they have the affinity for an ecosystem. They have a connectedness so that they can get the support to actually take their idea, scale it up, and for us to be competitive. So a lot of discussion now will be around how can we make ourselves competitive when the world's conversations have become much more nationalist.
How can businesses really stand out?
So there is no magic bullet in this, right? So for us, what we have to make sure is that we remain open. We remain open to the world, because Singapore as a country cannot shut itself out, because our domestic market is not large enough, like China, to support itself, or China or India. So for us, our competitiveness is based on innovation. Our competitiveness is based on the human capital that we have and the ability for us to support entrepreneurs and medium-sized businesses to scale up. So everything that we do here at SMU, our Institute for Innovation and Entrepreneurship, and the Lee Kuan Yew Global Business Plan competition is focused on making sure that we get the best from around the world to look at us, to come here, and to make sure that we can then be successful.
Well, Professor, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. My pleasure. So thank you very much for having me.
We've been speaking with Professor Gerard George, Dean at the Lee Kong Chian School of Business at Singapore Management University, here on Primetime on Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.